our website, zen.kvmr.org, and we've got quite a lot of notes and homework up there. It, just once in a while, more than the usual amount of information comes out. And on this occasion, that webpage actually contains five or six of some of the best compact utilities I think I've ever seen for both PC and Mac.
Yes.
And there's even a blurb about the famous iPhone in there, too.
Yeah, and I sent you a couple of links earlier today about how to use the iPhone as a storage device.
So I made a mistake last time.
Well, you didn't make a mistake. You said that it can be used as a storage device.
Not literally. In other words, if you have an iPod, you can, in iTunes, switch on a little checkbox that says use this as a storage device, and you can actually see everything on the iPod. That checkbox doesn't exist for an iPod, excuse me, for an iPhone or an iTouch. It doesn't mean you can't get data off the drive. And you sent me a link, which is in our today's show page, which is about how you can actually pull videos and music back off the
device. You were
able
to get those there? Great.
I had a quick look at it.
Yeah.
It's called iPod ripping. And for obvious reasons, when you have an iPod or an iPhone or any of those iTouches or any of that kind of stuff, Apple don't really want you to use it as a mule to transport music between machines. So therefore, you can't just use it in disk mode and get the music back off.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, a lot of the utilities are not really disk access utilities. They're actually rippers, meaning they'll turn around and drag the music back off. The scenario is, imagine that your computer goes AWOL or breaks, and your iTunes with all your music in it is no longer available, but your music's on the iPod or the iPhone or whatever, and it's not on your computer. Well, wouldn't it be nice to use the iPod or the iPhone as a backup and restore your music? iTunes doesn't let you do that, so you need one of these utilities known as an iPod ripper, and we've mentioned that in some details there.
Yeah, and one of the reasons why I came up and found this is I used on my iPhone over the weekend, Cycorder, C-Y-C-O-R-D-E-R, to record video. And I was looking in iTunes, and it didn't recognize any of it.
Because it's a non-Apple thingy.
It's a non-Apple thingy. So I went searching, and sure enough, it came up with disk.
It's what we've got the link on the page for.
And there's another thing called iPhone Browser, which is not a browser in the typical sense of a web browser, but a browser in the sense of a directory.
Yeah.
And it will show you what's on. However, from that, although it looks really nifty, and you can probably get into some troublesome areas that maybe we shouldn't be in, as if like the boot directory, the root directory and things, I couldn't quite find the videos, and I couldn't find a search to search for them.
Right.
But I know that there's a way to get to them, so I have to play with it a little bit.
You'll end up with a Spider-Man statement, Glenn, with his, which is that with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes.
So if you let loose on the file system, you can knock out things that you probably shouldn't be messing with. I've got a video. I'm going to see if I can play the audio from a video here. And this is about complaints that have been leveled against many of the cell phone companies that operate in our country, in our good country here, which is that they, with gay abandon, give away your call records even if you declare yourself unlisted. So Verizon is apparently one of the worst offenders. And people's home addresses and various other stuff can be found. So see what you think of this recording. I'm hoping it's going to work. If it doesn't, we'll just wing it. But I think this is quite amusing. See what you think of this, if it works. Hope so.
Hi, I'm Sir John Hargrave from Zug.com. You know, our cell phone records are not very safe. It's very easy to get the private information of just about anyone, even if they've got an unlisted number. That's because the cell phone companies don't put a lot of effort into keeping them secret. So I've tracked down the private phone number and home address of Ivan Seidenberg, who is the CEO of Verizon, and I'm going to his home today to deliver a message on behalf of all Verizon customers. Good Lord, look at these houses. Where's the butler? I'm here on behalf of Verizon customers. Please do a better job protecting your customers' cell phone records. Everyone has the right to privacy, including you, Ivan. When we don't have privacy, then freaks with bullhorns start showing up. Keep our phone numbers unlisted. Keep our cell phone records private. Keep us safe in your loving arms, Ivan. Stroke our hair. Can you hear me, Ivan? This is a serious issue. Can you hear me now? Can you hear me now?
Okay, at this point, he gets back into his car and he gets out an entire public address system.
Can you hear me now?
And now he turns it up to full volume.
Can you hear me now?
Set off the dogs.
Yeah.
Run away.
Sorry about that.
I don't think Ivan came out at this point. The audio is quite good. It's like YouTube.
I was almost attacked by friggin' Marmaduke. Well, to recap, Ivan Seidenberg might not care about your privacy, but his neighbors in his gated community certainly do care about theirs. I'm John Hargrave, Zug.com.
Love it, Zug.com. That's a passive resistance to the almighty powers of the powers that be. Yeah, good one. I enjoyed that. You think that was a good one?
Yes, it was excellent. Thank you for searching that out and alerting us to the fact that through various companies, you know, our records are not necessarily private. Boy, they spend a ton of money sending out all these silly notices of how important our privacy is to them. And then, you know, they don't bother to really follow up with that and be true to it.
I think they've got a boilerplate statement that says the moment there's any hint at all of something being violated, they serve their legal requirement. They send a notice. Well, we're terribly sorry. It usually says, the boilerplate usually says, we take our consumers' privacy concerns very seriously. Mm-hmm. Very seriously. I mean, like they're not laughing away to the bank. Anyway, you can look at that. If you want to frighten yourself, at the top of today's show page is, I won't go any further than just to say, you know, take a look at usdebtclock.org. There's a link up there, usdebtclock.org. If you want to frighten the living daylights out of yourself, in Manhattan many years ago when I first came to the States, there was actually a single counter that showed the debt running up for the country. Now it shows the debt to Medicare and Social Security, like it's all in red.
And when you came to this country many, many moons ago,
it was only in the trillions then.
It was only in the trillions, and they've had to update the size of the clock, haven't they?
Extra digits on it, yeah. So there's that too, if you want to frighten yourself. There's a little bit of blurb about CD-ROM drives and why it's hard to get CDs to read faster than 52X. In other words, the original 1X speed, which came out in, I don't know, mid-80s or something, there's a specification put out by Microsoft when it developed the multimedia platform for Windows 3.1 that a basic CD-ROM, to qualify as a multimedia hardware, had to deliver 150 kilobytes per second, which is enough for music, and that was treated as a 1K standard. So 10K or 10 speed is actually 1500 kilobytes per second. The top theoretical limit is about 52X, because at that point, 52 times that basic speed means the outer edge of the disk is traveling over 100 miles an hour. So increasing the speed any more may result in the disk actually disintegrating and flying about inside your machine. And although the disks are made of this material called polycarbonate, which is extremely durable, very, very tough, what can actually happen is, as I used to do, I used to actually stick eccentric labels on the disk. Very big no-no. It gets warm inside the machine. You stick a label on there. The machine warms up. The label is off-center, and it didn't used to matter when it was a slow disk. Now what happens is anything stuck on the disk, including ink and veneer and silk screen, comes flying off and dislodges into the machine. I think it was one of the companies, NEC or one of those companies, figured a way to get a faster read speed over 72 and up to 100 times the 150K rate, and they did that by having 7 lasers inside the device. But really, what would anyone do with speed like that? Good question. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, got a little bit of blur about that. Interesting stuff. Glenn, you sent me something about smartypig.com. What did you know about that?
Well, you know, I got a referral to somebody. As most of you know, over the last year, interest rates have dropped dramatically on savings, and I had some money in ING Direct, and they were paying at 1.3% per year interest on a savings account, which is pretty good, and it's dropped now below, I believe, 0.5%, which was a substantial hit to the interest that they pay. And so this referral was to a website called smartypig.com, where they're paying, I believe, 2.76% interest at the moment, and it's a place also where you can set up savings goals and involve others in your savings goals for either yourself or your children. So it's checked out through bankrate.com, and we have links to both of those on the webpage today. Again, thanks to you, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't thought about moving any money in there, but at some point maybe.
It says it's FDIC insured in the end. Yes. You know, caveat emptor, which is a Latin saying, buyer beware. How do you know it's the real thing? Smarty pig. Looks real. It's got a nice pink pig on it. But you just got this information from this show because the views and opinions expressed on this show have got nothing to do with reality as perceived by the folks here, any cerebral process going on, the staff, volunteers, members, or anyone else. It's just... we're whistling the wind.
Yeah, and I'm sure there's probably some place where you could go to FDIC.gov or .org.
The FDIC.gov, probably.
.gov and back check to make sure that SmartyPig.com is truly an FDIC-insured company. And you have to look up the rules, all of those insurance rules. The rates of, or the amount of insurance has gone up dramatically because of all the trouble we've had.
Which means the interest goes down because it comes out of that.
Right. So you do need to look and you know, take a look and see what those limits are. You can't take $5 million and put it in one bank and expect to be covered by the FDIC.
Right.
I think it's like up to either $250 million or under circumstances.
$250,000 is higher than it was.
Or,
oh, I've got that kind of money.
Or
right.
maybe a million. But again, you need to read up on that yourself because I am not the financial expert here. Just passing on some web links.
Yeah, my brother read this and he sent me back a superb link. See if you can guess who this quote came from. It said, owners of capital will stimulate the working class to buy more and more of expensive goods, houses, and technology, pushing them to take more and more expensive credits until their debt becomes unbearable. The unpaid debt will lead to bankruptcy of banks, which will have to be nationalized, and the state will have to take the road which will eventually lead to communism. And the hint is, that was written in 1867. Who said that?
Abraham Lincoln.
No. Same time. Karl Marx.
Karl Marx, okay. I'm not familiar with
Das Kapital, of course.
Yes, I haven't read so much. I've talked about that. How I don't want to use the word ignorant. How poorly read I am in U.S. classics and or worldwide classics.
Well,
I've
got to say,
history,
you know they say about computers. They say about history that those who don't know history are condemned to rediscover it, and those who don't know Unix are condemned to reinvent it. Well, Karl Marx warned us all that time ago that capitalist behavior leads to communist banks. Funny that, isn't it?
Yeah.
The quote's up there. I love it. There's another link below that talking about capitalism. Network Solutions was infiltrated by credit card fraud to the tune of 500,000 accounts being compromised. Mm. 500,000 accounts.
And Network Solutions is a big company out there, folks. That's where everyone must go in order to register a domain.
Well, it used to have to be everyone that went there. Not so now.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a little bit more further on. Where is it? Hold on. Oh, yes, here it is. About every show, there's always questions to me by people that because viruses are becoming more prevalent, because more and more people are experiencing them, I don't think I've ever actually met anyone now who hasn't at some point in their career in the last few years seen a virus on their machine, right, Glenn?
Correct.
In some form or another. And the question always becomes, you know, every show we do, I put out some other piece of information about why this happens, and I found another good link, which is about the economic returns for a virus or worm infection on your PC. So somebody did a review about the fact that it used to be that it was spotty-faced, bit-bashing, malevolent nerds who wanted to be appreciated for their programming prowess, and a teenager would let loose with a virus, like the famous I Love You one, which started all this, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
Now it's reckoned to have fragmented into two camps. One of them is the people that write the viruses, and the second camp is those people that collect together what's called botnets, which is the interaction of virally infected machines for subversive purposes, such as denial-of-service attacks and spamming. So it used to be there was one such career as a webmaster who made web pages, and now that's fragmented into sort of 10 or 12 different careers, as we know. There's social media marketers and search engine optimizers and cascading style sheet designers. Well, the virus writing market is fragmented into sort of 5 or 6 areas, and each of them are worth money. It's done for money now. It's organized crime. It's done for money. Good link there. I enjoyed it.
Oh, good.
What you got? Must be your turn.
Again, you're the one that's so good with doing homework, and I'm the one that's like, eh.
Oh, my God, you demean yourself as a smart person.
Okay. It's not that my tagline in the past has always been, I know a little bit about everything, but not very much about anything.
Oh, my God. In a specialist society. Oh, I did enjoy this. Many of our listeners out there, being of the reading persuasion, have got themselves these Kindle devices, which is the e-book reader. And this is digital rights management managed software that comes through the cell phone network and gets delivered onto this ebook reader, which is about the size of a large paperback book. And contrary to what most people think, when you buy a book, you're not actually buying the right to sell the content of that book. In other words, if, Glenn, I buy a book from you, I can sell it to somebody else, that's okay, but it doesn't entitle me then to copy it and sell it as many times as I like.
Ah.
Now, in the case of the Amazon, they charge the Amazon Kindle. They charge about $9 or $10, and you can download an ebook and read it on this unit. It turns out, accidentally, somebody propagated a book onto the Kindle network that people could buy for about $10, which turned out that the uploader had no right to do this with.
Ah.
So Amazon sent out a kill switch or a kill message, which removed these two books from people's Kindles, and it did refund the money.
Mm-hmm.
Somewhere, deep in their terms of service, it says they're entitled to do this, which is you buy an ebook and they decide you shouldn't have had it, they will refund you the money
and remove
and
it.
And remove it from. This is what I love. This is my favorite part of the story. Guess what the ebooks were.
How to sell ebooks?
No.
The Bible.
No, that would have been good.
Oh.
I think it's out of copyright, Jimmy. It's been a while. It was George Orwell's 1984 and Animal Farm.
Interesting.
The books that shouldn't have been uploaded that got removed from the Kindles. I'm thinking, did they stick it in a memory hole?
Hmm.
You know, did the author become an unperson?
Mm-hmm.
Was this the result of newspeak?
Yeah.
I love that. Of all the things that could have been taken off your Kindle, it had to be those two titles. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Now, are they going to pursue legally getting them? Legally acquiring the rights to...
I don't doubt it. I mean, what happened was that there was the assumption by somebody somewhere that after a certain number of years, it was in the public domain. And a bit of trivia was that the book 1984 was actually written in the year 1948.
Oh, okay.
Which is the reverse of 1984. I don't understand copyright issues, but however it got onto their network, it shouldn't have happened. And the owners of the copyright went ballistic and it was pulled. So they retained the right. Jeff Bezos, the proprietor of Amazon, made all sorts of humbled apologies and bowed his head to the ground and all the rest of it. Believe me, it's not the last time this is going to happen, though.
And it probably didn't, other than the profits they made, refunding the money didn't cost them too much money, because all they have to do is write a simple program that goes out and says, oops.
Yeah, but the loss of good faith is,
yeah, and the loss of good faith, which, with his apologies, hopefully that'll be. I'm not a trader at Amazon.com too often. I tend to get stuff at buy.com online.
Mm. And but we're talking the ebooks business, yeah.
Yeah, ebooks business. Now, is it only going to be at Amazon.com? Or is Barnes & Noble? Borders.
They've probably got competing stuff, but everything has to be routed, such as with iTunes and the iTunes Store. Everything has to be routed through their system.
Oh, interesting.
If you want to load stuff on the Kindle, you've got to have your Amazon account.
Mm, okay.
So there's that blurb, which I thought was particularly funny. I found some more utilities here. Learn about your CPU or your PC brain, memory type, and graphics. And there's a free utility. We periodically come up with this nice, easy website, cpuid.com. Cpuid.com.
Okay.
It'll even tell you who made the memory in your machine.
Ah.
So if you've got two dissimilar manufacturers of memory chip, which can be something that can cause a problem, they can look alike but be different manufacturers, which has been known to cause problems. It tells you in each slot who made the actual memory chip and how much data there is on it, data storage it has. It also tells you the size of the chip, and it tells you all about the CPU or the actual central processor unit, which is your brain. CPUID.com.
Now, I've just gone there. Do I have to download something in order to make it work? Okay.
Yeah. So and you don't install it. It's one of those nice utilities which you don't install. You download it, unzip it, and run it. You can put it anywhere you like and run it, and it will report on your CPU. You going to do it now?
Oh, yeah. One says download version setup. Another one says download version zip, no install.
Right. When it says no install, it means you can run it from a flash drive. You can
sit
it on your desktop and fire it, and it will run. It doesn't need any registry access. It doesn't do any INI files. It just does its thing.
Okay. And that's actually because once you don't want to set it up. It wouldn't hurt to set it up on your computer, but there's no need, because once you know what's in your computer, you know what's in it. Did you happen to use this on that computer that we were talking about over the weekend that was a little bit slow?
Which one?
Out there on Boogie Hill Road.
No, I didn't use this on that, but I do know what it is.
Ah.
What Glenn and I are talking about here is how much difference memory can make. It has 512 megabytes of memory, and it's a Presario 5150.
Oh, I thought it was a Dell. Why do I think it was a Dell? Maybe the...
I've got it written here. I'll give it to you later. Yeah.
Okay, thank you.
I actually listened to you and did something.
We're looking at beefing up the memory on a computer for a friend, and it'll make all a world of difference. It's an XP machine. It's got plenty of horsepower in the CPU.
It's nearly 3 gigahertz CPU.
Yeah, but it's just slow as molasses. It's like putting a turtle next to a horse in a race.
Yeah, so CPID will help. There is another program we use, Bellarc Advisor. This one tends to be... It's a different class of information. It's always fun to try. They're both free, so just trying different things.
Yeah.
Here we go. I'm moving rapidly today, Glenn, because I've got more utilities today than usual. This is a fascinating bit of work, and if anyone wants inside access to my brain and how it works, take a look at this. It's near the bottom of today's show notes. There's a great little free graphical utility for the Mac to show you just where all your disk space is gone. Now, this came up for a client where their Mac was almost completely overloaded with data, so it was giving that horrible message that said the startup disk is almost full. The problem becomes, well, how do you find out what it's full of without using profanity? A few months ago, we had a call from somebody that was using Final Cut, which is a piece of software that edits video, and they decided this has filled up their hard drives, and they'd finished with their video projects and needed to remove it, uninstalled Final Cut. But somewhere on the drive were large amounts of rendering files, which are very, very big data files that are no longer any use. How do you find where the big files are? The answer is you can go through with a command line, or you can click each folder, or you can guess where they are. You can do all this kind of stuff. But the true genius turns out to be a utility called Grand Perspective. It's a single word. Grand Perspective out on SourceForge.
Okay.
It's a small DMG file. It's a small utility, about under 2 megabytes in size. When you run it, it produces a fascinating graphical display known as a tree map, which is a rectangular block diagram where the individual rectangles represent
the a file and represent it in size.
That's correct. Better than that, what it does is it clumps together all the files. So, for example, it lumps together all the JPG files, all the picture files, as a particular color, say purple, and places them in a rectangle. So you're no longer just interested in which single files are so huge, it's which class of files are using up a lot of space. So if you notice half the diagram is purple because they're JPGs, you'll know that half your disk space has gone in images. And you can navigate from that so-called tree map to a Finder view, which will allow you to remove stuff. So if you find you've got a giant DV file, an uncompressed digital video file, by looking at that block diagram and seeing you've got, for example, red and it's a big DV file, you click on it, it'll say, this is myholidayinfrance.dv or whatever it is, and at that point you make a decision what to do with it by control clicking it, and it brings you to the Finder, and you can kill it if you feel like.
Okay.
So again, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yes.
Our PC brethren out there can go and have a crack at a similar utility.
Yeah, we've had that because I had that issue before. It's like, what is the largest file that I need to go get rid of? And there's some kind of tree.
WinDirstat.
Win Directory Statistics.
Yep. So for the Mac people out there, we've got Grand Perspective, and if you use that as one single word without a space in it in Google, you should find it, or use our website. For the PC brethren out there, WinDirstat. The third element here I was referring to is, if you want to know how the inside of my brain works, take a look at this, because, and maybe you don't want to, it uses an algorithm called TreeMap, which is explained with a link there. I won't read the link because it's too long. And it's some research work done at a university about the best possible way of presenting graphically to people fairly complex information. And TreeMap has been used for banks and in the stock market. It's used by the U.S. military to quantify their stocks of munitions. The TreeMap algorithm has been used all over the place. To my mind, it's probably the most straightforward way of representing large amounts of complex data in a kind of cosmetically and aesthetically pleasing way. And there's a long discussion in there about different perceptual ways of understanding very complex data. So I really, really had fun with that site. And it's not just academic site. Very useful stuff out there. I really liked it. There you go.
We just got an email from Mikhail, and it goes back to the, what's it called, the e-book?
Kindle.
There we go. And he said, as with Amazon and others, there is a similar issue with the iPhone. Apple has an app, Kill Switch, built into all versions of the iPhone OS, and there is nothing the average iPhone user can do about it. However, jailbroken iPhone users have the option to disable this feature, which I have done for more than a few people. Oh, no, he did it in my case. Okay, there we go. So I hope you don't mind that I'm sharing this, Mikhail.
Right, and it's actually inside, what is it? There's a utility program that comes with Cydia that's called Boss Prefs, I think it is. And it says remove Apple Kill Switch. Now, why Apple kills stuff sometimes is they put stuff through their app store that they regret putting through their app store. One of my favorite ones that they killed was a $99 application, the most expensive application you could get. And all it did was come up with a red screen that says, I paid $99 for this application. This was at a time when you had to get things through the iPhone store. You couldn't get them any other way. So the only way you'd ever see that screen come up on an iPhone would be, it would be like, you know, somebody driving a Hummer. It's like, look how dim I was and how much I paid.
You know, I sent you another link. I didn't send you a link, but I found something, and you may already have it and know about it, but it's Google Mobile for the iPhone. A great little app because, you know, the little keyboard is so small and our thumbs are so big.
You can talk to it.
You can talk to it, and it is incredibly accurate.
But does it love you?
I don't know.
What it will do, actually, Glenn, is it doesn't process the stuff on board. What it will do is take a recording and send it off.
Mm-hmm.
The other app that you may have got that I'm totally impressed with, actually, it's two apps that I got that I was just totally impressed with, blew my little socks away. One of them was, what was it? I keep wanting to call it Shazbat. You know, from Mork from Mork from Mork. Uh-huh. No, Shazam, that's it.
Shazam.
Yeah. Which recognizes music by listening to only 20 seconds of it. And the other one was, again, from our buddy Mikhail, which was, and it just had an update, Red Laser.
And that's for taking the...
barcodes.
The barcodes, yes.
This is a really trippy one, folks, and that is if you go, you have to have a defeated iPhone, so you can use Cydia and download this thing called Red Laser, which Mikhail told me about. It just had an update. You point the camera at a barcode and try to hold it still, and it eventually figures out what the barcode says, decodes the number, then it goes one stage further. If it's a registered universal product code, UPS symbol, mm-hmm. I think it is that what it's
yes.
called? It goes out to Google and finds out what it was. So I found out that we had a Krupp's coffee maker down at the fair, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
pointed this thing at it, it connected up to the wireless and came back within about 5 seconds ago, you're pointing that thing at a Krupp's coffee maker. And at that point I'm thinking, this is where I needed a tattoo on my forehead saying, you know, I'm the available nerd and I'm available from Amazon, and then point, you know,
While you're walking to the store, you know, at stores like Walmart, they have a little barcode
reader for
pricing stuff, and so you can go and compare prices someplace else. If you have either if you have the Edge system on AT&T with your iPhone, or
right.
if you have wireless access, which I don't think is available in Walmart.
As a protest, I'm feeling that if I ever got a tattoo, which I haven't got, what I'd do is actually have a barcode stamped on my forehead.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than these RFID chips, you know, just like stick your head. I'd love to go past the checkout, the supermarket counter, go dong.
I have a question for you, and I suspect that we might have Mikhail here on the phone, but we'll get to that in just a second, and
uh-huh.
he might have an answer to this also. I was in an event and a street event in San Francisco over the weekend, using my iPhone, not taking a ton of photographs.
Mm-hmm.
I did do 7 or 8 videos, which was great, using
mm-hmm.
Cycorder, but with photographs. I was concerned with trying to hold it steady, and you mm-hmm. were just now talking about trying to hold that steady and get
mm-hmm.
a picture of the barcode. Not a single one of the pictures came out fuzzy. Is there something in the iPhone that, even though I may not be totally stable, that when you push that camera button, or is the shutter speed just so fast that it's not going to get a fuzzy picture?
Glenn, it's all solid state. There is no mechanical shutter. There's no moving part for the camera. What happens if the light is bright... then the electronic shutter speed is fast and it's not blurred. But as yesterday when I was up at Baldwin Beach, beautiful sunset pictures, the sun went down as we were having a barbecue out there, and I took pictures, and they actually came out very artistic, but the shutter speed slowed down because of the lack of light.
Okay.
It's got a tiny, tiny aperture. When you look at that camera, it's not the problem with the number of pixels, it's the fact that it lets in such a tiny squint of light that the electronics has to up the exposure time on the light-sensitive cells,
okay.
Then it blurs.
Okay,
yeah.
So I just happen to be on a beautiful, beautiful sunny day
that's
in San Francisco,
right.
And that's why it works.
If there's
so
plenty
well.
Of fog and overcast and it was late, it would look more impressionistic,
mm-hmm.
but it
okay.
wouldn't be a fast shot.
Shall we go ahead with our first phone call of the day?
That'd be good. Who got a ding-ding? Did you get a ding-ding?
I don't know. I'll have to go look.
Somebody went ding-ding. Somebody sending you a text message?
Good afternoon, caller. Thanks for calling into Zentech. Welcome.
Did you press it?
I pressed it.
Yeah, I have just a comment about memory speed and such in PCs. I'm sure you're probably familiar with MemTest 86,
right.
which is available at various websites. Almost every Linux boot CD, you can run it directly from the boot CD,
mm-hmm.
and that tells you CPU speeds, front side bus, L1 cache, L2 cache. There's all kinds of other stuff. It can also probe the SPD bus and
mm-hmm.
find out what memory types you have, all that kind of good stuff, as well as you can run like a full memory test suite, so I really recommend that for anybody that's having memory problems or wondering if their machine is slow or whatever.
Good point. The difference between this and what we spoke about, which is cpuid.com, is the fact that MemTest, which the caller mentions, memtest86.com, I think it is,
right.
is strictly speaking a little bit more difficult to implement because you can't run it in Windows. You have to launch
and
start.
Yeah, you have to boot it. Yeah,
yeah,
you have to boot into MemTest, correct?
You know, that's right, and I couldn't recommend it highly enough. If you've ever got funky problems going on, this will figure it out for you. Even if you don't understand it, just launch the test and leave it alone overnight. If it's not running next morning, you got memory problems.
Or if you have some red. If red comes up
right.
on the screen...
Uh-oh. strangely, because of the way memory is organized, it can't pin it down to which chip is wrong because of the way the memory is addressed. It can't say, you know, chip number 3 is messed up. It doesn't work that way, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, you have memory management function in there. But
mm-hmm.
what I usually do, if I have some kind of an issue, I start pulling out one at a time
mm-hmm.
and then rerun it. And then if I still have the issue, pull out another strip of memory, depending on how many you have. eventually you'll run it overnight. You won't have issues, and you can usually pin it down to one SIM or DIM.
You know, also it's like the crying baby issue, which is if you put the baby in the car to take it to the nurse, the act of actually manipulating the baby or the memory, pulling it in and out of the slots can sometimes
reseeding is the magic trick of almost all electronics industry. First thing you do, reseed all your boards and try again. Another thing on memory that people may not be familiar with, some memory buses have weak drivers, and for instance, if you have two SIMs or DIMs in your machine, mm-hmm. and you put a third one in, sometimes just the physical act of loading that bus will be enough to start getting memory problems, even though all the individual DIMs are good, but the drivers on the motherboard might be weak. I've seen that before. But MemTest 86 if you have a memory problem. But
yeah.
I'll get off there and let you guys keep going.
Great comment. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Glenn's in control.
Okay, we'll go on with our next caller.
Cool.
Welcome to Zentech. Hi.
Greetings. My name is Ricky.
Hi, Ricky. How are you?
I'm okay, thanks.
Good.
Okay, so I'm not the most experienced with maintaining my computer, so I have this problem that I noticed, hopefully not too late, but I have an hourglass on my computer that's rotating and turning mm-hmm. and constantly running. And I went in to check my firewall, mm-hmm. and I couldn't get in there. I couldn't remember what it said, something like being controlled externally or something like that. I'm wondering what can I do to repair or see. I think I got a virus or something going on in there. And
I'm going to make a wild behind guess here about what's going on, which is if you got that message that something else is controlling the firewall, it's going to be a product like Symantec. Am I right?
Right.
Do you have Symantec 360 or whatever the heck it's called, Internet Security?
By Norton.
I have Norton.
Okay.
Yeah. That's a wild, I was going to say a wild ass guess, but I can't say that.
Yeah,
so.
That was, when it's not a wild guess, it's a really smart guess, because
yeah, so
Paul's going to fill you in on what your problem may be.
Here's the problem.
From the outside.
If you try to get to the Windows firewall and some other application has got access to it, like this Symantec product, that's the message you'll get. And the second issue is if you've got a spinning hourglass, it's simply because the utility that's controlling the firewall is so hungry on resources, it's got no time over for anything else. It's very secure, but you won't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm. Norton is extremely, extremely, extremely top-heavy. I'd recommend that you don't use it, because it just takes too much resources. You can have a really fast computer, 2 or 3 gigs of RAM, and you start up Norton, and in some cases even McAfee will do this.
It'll consume
and all
everything
the stuff
you got,
that it has going in the background to protect you just tanks your computer. So mm-hmm. I would advise trying, and again, you heard our caveat earlier about the opinions here are those expressly of
right.
us and not anyone else. Download AVG Free, and you can get that at www.downloads.com.
Singular.
Download.com, no S. And in the search box, type AVG 8.5 free. Go past the sponsored links and look for the one that's been downloaded like 350 million mm-hmm. times. Get that, install it, update it, make sure it's running, and then uninstall Norton. Do you have the disks that came with it so you can put it back in if you feel that you'd like to?
Yeah, I do.
Okay.
Yeah. And the bottom line is the functions performed by Norton are now performed by the latest breed of browsers or web page applications. So if you get the latest Firefox, which is 3.5.1, and God forbid you even get the latest Internet Explorer, which is version 8, they tend to take care of business about preventing you from visiting malicious sites. There is no point in having two sets of padlocks, one behind the other. So rely on the browser and Windows' own firewall and AVG, I would say, rather than any of these McAfee or Symantec Internet security products.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And then another thing you can get, and I think we have links on these on our site for like Spybot Search and Destroy, which it finds other stuff, not necessarily malicious stuff, but stuff you may not want hanging around on your computer.
AVG now has a built-in. They bought up a company a year and a half ago called EWSoft or something.
Okay.
So the AVG product now contains some anti-spyware components. Your browsers now have got anti-spyware and anti-phishing components. That covers the basis for me pretty much. But you'll never cover them all. That's the bottom line. You will never fully prevent viruses. I've said in the last 3 or 4 years, mm-hmm. I've not met somebody that hasn't had some kind of virus on a PC for some reason.
So I really don't need to go out and
don't need to pay a penny.
Purchase anything else.
Just time and effort.
Just time and effort to sit there and look at the free downloads and
some of
the Spybot kind of stuff.
That'd be true.
Yeah, because those are what Paul and I use, and I can guarantee you, for me, I have virtually no trouble with spyware or with viruses. One of the nice things about Firefox, it has this a pop-up blocker, and boy, that is really, really nice. Yeah. So that when you are at a site that wants to pop up a thing, it'll warn you. It'll say, this site wants to pop up a window. Suppose you want it. You know, maybe you're on a picture site, and when you click on a photo in the album, it wants to pop up the actual photo. So you say, yes, that's okay.
It's become more finely crafted, because it's okay in a website to click a link that results in a pop-up because you asked for it. It's not okay to pop up a link that you didn't ask for. So Firefox, I've never seen blocking something you asked for. I've seen it blocking stuff you didn't ask for, which is good.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. And report back to us and let us know how your computer's doing after that.
Great. I found your online. I guess I can communicate with you there also, right?
Yes, it's zen@kvmr.org.
Also, if you're interested in how well your machine is protected against pop-ups, go to popuptest.com, which launches five or six different types of pop-ups, some of which should be allowed, most of which shouldn't. Popuptest.com. Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Got it. Great.
Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we'll go on to our next caller here. Hi, you're on the you're on Zentech with KVMR.
Is that me?
That's you. 1:43 in the afternoon. Hi.
Okay. Hey, this is Johnny.
And, hi.
I've been a Mac person for most of my life.
Good for you.
But now I have a new laptop with the Intel chip, so I put Windows in there with Parallels and... I'm wondering, do I need to get some kind of virus software? I've never worried about it with Macs, of course, but now that I've got Windows ready to open.
You need it under Parallels because you are actually running Windows in its own right on the same platform as if it were a real Windows. Well, not as if. It is a Windows machine when you're running it that way. So, yes, you do need an antivirus when you're running Windows XP, no matter on what.
Uh-huh.
And
so
AVG is free. Well, Glenn recommended download.com or go to free.avg.com.
It, well, you know what? Eventually, when you click through all those clicks there, when they try to sell you the program, it takes you to download.com. So,
Glenn rests his case. He's correct. If you go to download.com, but what was it you had? AVG 8.5 free.
Yeah, AVG 8.5 free. Scroll past the little sponsored links and you know look.
AVG 8.5.
A number
8.5.
AVG 8.5.
Correct. Free.
Oh, okay. On download. Download.com,
and be sure to put in the word free because they do have a paid version, which you're happy to. You're more than welcome to pay for. We found that the free version works wonderfully.
Okay, thanks.
Great.
Thanks, Johnny.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Good point to mention something here. What this caller was talking about was a piece of software called Parallels that allows you to run on an Intel Mac, that is, allows you to run Windows because there are a few things in Windows that even a Mac user wants. Classically and typically, what the Mac user wants is those websites that require Internet Explorer 7 or now 8. Realtors, for example, because of the Paragon system, require Internet Explorer 7.8, 7 or version, I think it's actually version 7. And it doesn't come as part of the Mac OS. The newest version of the Internet Explorer, or the last one they made, was, I think, 5.2. It's way out of date. It doesn't work. ActiveX, which is the beast of the moment that runs under Internet Explorer, is required by some websites. So the Mac users are SOL if they want the Internet Explorer without getting the whole business of XP and the antivirus and all the rest of it. There is a way out, folks. There is a way you can do this. And again, we thank Mikhail for this. There is an application out there based on open source software known as Wine, and the name of the application for the Mac is Crossover.
Okay.
So if you look on Google for Crossover for Mac, this is a very ingenious application. What it does is it provides a what they call a bottle environment, which is a chunk of memory and resources on the disk, to run the application from Windows, such as Internet Explorer 7, in an environment which looks like that program to be Windows. So it's Windows without Windows. And you don't need an antivirus in this case, because Internet Explorer, when it executes, will be making calls to the surrounding operating system, which is emulated by Crossover. Those of us from the Linux community will remember an application called Wine, which is Windows is not emulated, W-I-N-E. That's been taken and commercialized, and the cost is less than getting a licensed copy of XP and Parallels. Parallels is, I don't know, $60-$70.
Mm-hmm.
Windows XP, if you can even get a licensed version, is $140. Crossover is $60 or $70, and on their website, which I can't remember, what they do as a commercial entity using open source software is they certify certain applications. In other words, they indicate they have tried and tested and concluded that application A, B, and C will work in this Crossover environment, but D, E, and F will not. So their so-called bottle environment has got a little API or little operating system tweaks to make Internet Explorer 7 think it's running.
Crossover Mac allows you to install many popular Windows applications,
right.
And it looks like it's at codeweavers.com.
Sounds right.
Okay.
Yeah. The important thing to look through there is, does it include an Internet Explorer 8 yet, Glenn?
Oh, yeah, let's see.
Because they basically certify this, and the nice thing is you can try before you buy, and if it does what you want, you need no antivirus, you need no operating system, and it certainly uses a lot less space on your precious machine.
See.
So they give a list of stuff on there that it will do, right? The purpose behind this is you may have some PC-registered software that you'd like to run under the Mac without Windows, so there's a list of what it will do out there.
I can't tell just by looking at it here what it does cover and what it doesn't, but you could go there and easily...
Yeah, codeweavers.com,
yes.
Is that right? Yeah, and it's only $60-$70 or less. Does it mention the price?
Yeah, the $40 for their standard and the professional is $70.
Wonder what the difference is.
Yes. On the standard, you do not get crossover games, enhanced deployability features, multi-user support, volume discounts, or educational discounts, where on the professional you do get those things.
So probably the $40 version will probably do what you wanted. So that's good, too. Listener feedback's welcome on that. I've had a lot of luck with that. There's a few things it won't run, but then it clearly tells you it ain't going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably not very good at running anything that needs real-time access, such as audio software. So Adobe Audition running under that, I think Mikhail tried that. If anyone's had any luck running audio software under crossover, let me know.
Okay.
Cool.
And let's go on to our next caller, who I'm going to say beep to because you're the only caller. Hi.
Hi.
How are you today?
Oh, fine, thanks. I have a question.
Yes.
I would like to have my cassette tapes converted to digital so that I could put it into wiretap on my computer.
Okay. What you would want to do, and I'm not sure that I'm going to get this correctly, but Paul will be able to fill in the blanks, is get an audio cable that has the red and white RCA jacks that will plug into the back of either your receiver or if your cassette player is an amp itself, from there into your line in on the computer, which is a 3.5 millimeter,
yeah, a little headphone type of jack.
Headphone jack.
Tell me, caller, are you comfortable with the idea of plumbing your cassette deck into your computer?
You know, I think I've done it before, but it was kind of set up for me, and I can't remember how to do it now.
Okay, so what have you got for playing the cassettes at the moment? Is it a deck, or is it a boombox, or what do you have that you play the cassettes back on? It's a boombox. Look on the back of the boombox and see if you can see a red and a white socket on the back of the boombox.
I'm sure I have. But, uh-huh.
Yeah, and it may have, it's an inferior quality, but you may have a headphone output, so you need to get the audio out of that box somehow.
Okay.
And then get a suitably equipped cable that Glenn described to go into the computer.
Uh-huh.
And you can download a free piece of software. This is a PC or this is a Mac?
Mac.
It's a Mac. Okay, you can get a program called Audacity for the Mac.
Audacity?
Yep. Okay. If you look in Google for Mac Audacity.
Uh-huh. And that is connects the...
It's software that allows you to record. The Mac natively doesn't come with any means to make recordings of sound, strangely
right.
enough. So you get this free software, which we love, which is called Audacity for the Mac, and when you connect up your cassette deck and start playing the music, you'll see a little visual graph running in Audacity, which is the sound graph of the sound coming into the machine, and then you press the record button. That's summarizing it very briefly, but that's what you need to do.
Okay. So what you're saying, if I use that, I don't need to use my wiretap?
What's wiretap?
It's a recording program. I can record like...
Oh. I'm not familiar with it, but you may be able to use that. If it's an audio recording software, then the answer is yes, you probably can use wiretap.
And if you're familiar with it, I would say go ahead and stick with that.
Yeah, so don't worry about Audacity. Try to use wiretap if you're familiar with it. That's probably that's probably what will do it. You just need to get the audio out of the cassette deck into the back of the Mac so that wiretap can show you the little graph of the sound coming in, and then you hit record.
Okay, so all I need is the connection then?
Yes.
And we recommend that on the boombox that you use the red and white RCA connectors as opposed to the line out. They're higher quality output.
Okay.
That's going to be the catch, is exactly what the cassette deck does.
Okay.
All righty.
All right. Thank you so much.
Oh, thanks for calling in.
I just summarized the whole recording industry in like five fell swoops. There's going to be people out there going, wait, it's not that simple. Well, of course not.
Bye-bye now.
Take care.
Okay, and we do have one more caller at 1:52 in the afternoon. Hi, you're live on Zentech. Welcome. Hi, caller, that's you. Well, let's see, maybe I didn't... Yeah, we've got you on the air. Knock, knock, beep, you're the only caller.
Oh, now they've gone. They couldn't stand it anymore. The suspense was killing
so
them.
So go ahead and let that go. Yeah. Let me do take a moment to thank the folks who help make programming possible here at KVMR. And they do include Ohmsoft Technologies, a local internet service provider focused on customer privacy. Ohmsoft donates a portion of proceeds to the Davis Community Network, providing internet and web resources to nonprofit community groups throughout Yolo County. Information at dcn.org. And of course, our most heartfelt and wonderful thanks out to them and to you, our listener supporters. We thank you very much for being there every hour of every day. And let's see if we can't go to...
Oh, quick one.
How did that one get
Happy birthday, Bugs Bunny.
Oh, okay.
1940. This day, 1940.
40, so that would make him 69 years old.
Yep, and he was originally patented after Groucho Marx, which you can kind of see.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. We have a call on hold. I'm not sure how that happened, so I'm going to say, caller, you're live. Oh, that's how that works.
I'm
okay.
On.
Yes, you're on.
Hey there, how you doing?
Fine. With that last caller, what would be the free downloaded software for a PC to transfer?
Same.
Audacity.
Same.
Oh.
For PC and for Mac.
Yeah. Okay.
Don't you love that?
Okay. Is that Marilyn?
Yes.
Okay. We'll be in touch. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And we'll go on to our next caller, which will probably be our last call of the day. Well, who knows? You're next. Hi.
Hello. Am I on now?
You are on live on the air.
You cut me off on the last one.
I apologize.
Okay. This is Doug Austin, and I got a question for you about MP3 players. I have... I'm a PC guy, and I got an iPod last year and did the iTunes thing and familiar with that. Well, I have a friend who has an MP3 player, and so I tried to download iTunes and then sync it to the MP3 player. It didn't work. So,
but it's not an iPod, is it?
No, it's an MP3 player.
Made by somebody other than Apple.
Yeah, it's like a Zune or something like that.
Well, if it is a Zune, that's made by Microsoft, and Windows Media Player is, I was going to say, the application of choice, but I wonder about my definition there. If it is a Zune made by Microsoft, it's supposed to, I love that word, supposed to work with the Windows Media Player.
Well, okay, so let's say that it's not a Zune, it didn't work, so what is the preferred program that you use for your... to take the place of iTunes.
You know, this almost sounds like one of those feeds between comedians. I don't know. How ugly is your wife? Well, the answer is that I've used Winamp for those third-party MP3 players. In other words, if you've got a little MP3 player that's not a Zune and it's not an iPhone,
right.
The free application Winamp from winamp.com
right.
has the ability to read MP3s off removable media. So when you plug in these little MP3 players, they look like a disk drive and you can see the music on them.
Right.
So the program Winamp will actually read the media on there and help you catalog them and do stuff with it, and you can pull stuff on and off. It's originally operated. It was originally written by Justin Frankel, I think his name was, and it was bought by America Online in an aborted attempt to compete with Apple and sell music.
Uh-huh.
The software is still out there, and the idea was they would sell music to any device that you had, so it does understand MP3 files existing on third-party hardware.
And it'll actually list, you know, Britney Spears singing...
Oh, that's what you like, is it, Glenn? Oh, great.
I'd love you. You didn't let me finish. Whatever it is she sings.
Whatever.
What
who knows what she sings?
Who knows what
she
sings?
Get your hair cut, or yeah. I don't know.
So you can take your MP3 player to Winamp.
That's correct. And you can tinker around endlessly with iTunes, but not being made by Apple, it ain't going to work the way you expect. So Winamp will.
Okay.
Try that, Doug.
That's what I need. Thanks.
Spiffy,
thanks,
man.
For calling in.
Thank you, man.
Bye-bye.
Ta-ta. Now, a final thing. You actually got through the homework today.
Yes.
The
thank
final
so
thing
much.
On here, yeah. We've been using JK Defrag for a while. Do you remember that, Glenn?
Yes. Uh-huh.
It's an application. I tended to hesitate about recommending it to people because you have to hand tweak and move and drag it around. The designer of JK Defrag, which is a PC hard disk defragmenting utility that beats the socks off the internal defrag, Mr. Kessel, I think his name is, has written version 4, which comes with an installer and lots of options, and he's picked the wonderful name for his website of mydefrag.com. Mydefrag.com.
Okay.
Nice piece of software. It's got a scheduler. Scheduler, meaning you can make it go off at 4 or 5 in the morning. It's got a screensaver mode, and it's got a scripting mode where you can actually make it order the files. It's much more powerful than the previous one. If you just use it in its basic mode, it's not one of these darn things with switches up the wazoo. If you just use it in its off-the-shelf mode, as I call it, in other words, you just go download, install, works great. Okay. If you want to get clever and get witty with it and learn everything you ever needed to know but are afraid to ask about defragmenting your damn hard drive, This is the one to go for, mydefrag.com. I happen to like it. Version 4.11 is the latest.
Okay.
If you wonder where the Mac equivalent is, there isn't one. The underlying operating system defragments itself with a low priority in the background. Don't bother.
Don't bother.
Yep.
Okay.
Cool. Hey, did we cover everything today?
I think we did. Gosh, mm-hmm. It's been a wonderful day. What's the temperature outside?
It says, and I can't believe it, 157 degrees, but that's the clock. It's actually 91 degrees. It's 1:57 in the afternoon.
Excellent. 91 degrees outside. I'm like, you know, 132. Goodness.
Well, the air conditioner here, we're spoiled. You know what I mean? That's what happened.
Thanks to the powers that be that did get our studios air conditioned here. We had air conditioning, but it was very sporadic.
And noisy.
And it can get really heated up in here with all the hot stuff we play.
Yeah, I think it's Eric Rice that made this possible. So Eric, we thank you from the bottom of our puny little hearts and our scraggy little butts that it's actually a tolerable temperature. We may have to stay there and not leave for the next broadcast. Who's going to be Jimmy Cardin's Rock and Roll Party.
Yeah.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
Should we do outro music? Is that a good move?
That would be a good thing.
I want to see if we've killed Wavecart. Now, what happened is if earlier on at the beginning of the show, if you remember, we played a piece of YouTube audio. Sometimes that kills the sound card. I'm going to try it anyway and fade it up in this kind of, you know, highly professional broadcast way. Is it actually... Oh, listen.
It works.
He's playing Fractal Zoom from Brian Eno's actually working. We haven't wrecked the deck today. Today has been a good day, Glenn.
And a reminder, this is KVMR FM Nevada City. Until a fortnight, adios.
We love you, and we'll see you again, guys. Bye for now.
Bye-bye.